And there are string theory and gauge theory motivations to study such an object. From the string theory point of view, the Hemisphere partition function is the central charge of D-brain, as I'm going to argue. So by the central charge, I mean when you consider Carabiao compactification, D-brain wrapping a cycle in a Carabiao gives rise to a particle in a four-dimensional theory. And so if you consider type two string theories, then the four-dimensional theory has n equals two supersymmetry, and the central charge of the particle is what I refer to as the central charge of a D-brain. Now, the Hemisphere partition function is also closely related to Gromov-Witten theory. By looking at examples, people have noticed that the Hemisphere partition function is essentially the so-called I or J function. But I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm not going to say anything more about this aspect of the Hemisphere partition function. But there are also gauge theory motivations to study the Hemisphere partition function. And in fact, for us, these are the gauge theory motivations were the main motivations to consider localization on the hemisphere. Well, but this is yet another example of supersymmetric localization. There have been many examples of modern localization studied by Peston for the four sphere. And so this is one example. And hemisphere, it turns out the hemisphere connects the A model at the tip or the north pole of the sphere to the B model in the region, in the neighborhood of the boundary or the equator. Well, this is because the particular supercharge we'll be using for localization, it looks like the supercharge of a topological A model near the North Pole, and it looks like the supercharge of the topological B model near the equator. And as I'm going to explain, the Hemisphere partition function can also be used to compute domain wall expectation values. Well, actually, also a matrix element. So these two points I will try to elaborate in the second part. Okay, so now I'm going to be more specific. So we'll be considering two-dimensional n equals 2, 2 supersymmetric theories. Well, two-dimensional n equals 2, 2 is kinematically the same as dimensional reduction of four-dimensional n equals 1 supersymmetry. So we have gauge multiplet and chiral multiplet. But in two dimensions, it's also possible to have twisted chiral multiplets, but in my talk, I will not consider twisted chirals. So then the following bulk data characterize a two-dimensional theory. So we have a gauge group G, which is a compact D group. And we have, I'm going to denote the chiral fields, the chiral superfields by phi, little phi. And so phi takes values in the vector space Bmat, and it is a representation of the gauge group. The theory might have interactions by a superpotential. So superpotential is a polynomial in the chiral field phi, and it has to be gauge invariant. For each abelian factor in the gauge group, we have the complexified Fi parameter T. The real part is the real Fi parameter, and the imaginary part is the theta angle that appears in the in front of the topological term in the action. And in two dimensions, we can also have the so-called twisted masses. Roughly, they take values in the Cartan subalgebra of the complexified flavor specific group. And the Hemisphere partition function is a function. It's going to be a function of the complexified Fi parameter and the twisted masses. But because some of you experts on GLSM or localization in two dimensions, I want to give you somewhat technical details. So that is, when you when you do not have a superpotential, the theory has a large flavor symmetry. So by flavor symmetry, I mean the global symmetries that commute with the supersymmetry. And well, for each irreducible representation of the gauge group, so I labeled irreducible representation by this little a. So for each irreducible representation, we have at least U1 flavor symmetry group. But now, when we have a superpotential, the flavor symmetry is reduced. So namely, the original flavor symmetry, which leaves the superpotential invariant, are the true flavor symmetry that are preserved by the superpotential. Right, so that's what I call G sub F. So this is reduced flavor symmetry. And now in flat two dimensional space time, the twisted masses are just complex parameters. On a curved space time, like a sphere or a hemisphere, but it turns out that only the imaginary part. So in the literature, including our paper, people often refer to the real part of M here as R charges. But in this talk, in order to simplify terminology, I'm just going to call M twisted masses. But because the real part is really R charge, there is a constraint because the superpotential must have R charge minus two in my convention, and therefore the twisted masses, in my convention cannot vanish. So the twisted masses really take values in the Cartan of the complexified flavor group up to a shift. It's a detail. Anyway, in this talk, I will focus on the geometric phase of the theory. So in the space of FI parameter, I will focus on a chamber. I'll focus on a cone where the theory flows to a nonlinear sigma model. And also, I'm going to assume that chiral superfields can be split into two parts, the so-called P fields and the fields I call X. And the superpotential is going to be of the form P alpha G alpha, where G alpha of X, G alpha is a polynomial in X, a homogeneous, it's a polynomial. And G alpha itself does not have to be gauge invariant, but of course the after summation of alpha, the superpotential must be gauge invariant. And in this setup, in this particular setup, there is a canonical choice of U1 R symmetry. So in general, R symmetry can mix with flavor symmetries, but in this case, there is a canonical choice such that the fields xi have R charge zero and the Lagrangian multiplier fields p have R charge minus two. So xi plays a role of homogeneous coordinate. Okay, so because we are in the geometric phase, the gauge theory flows to a nonlinear sigma model in the infrared. And low energy target space is assumed to be smooth. This translates to certain transversality conditions on G alpha. And the target space takes this form. So from this we get that the G alpha vanish. So we take the zero locus of G, and the D-term constraint implies that we have to delete a certain set from the vector space. And if we focus on the complex structure, we can just say that we divide by the complexified gauge group. Okay, and in this setup, flavor symmetry group G sub F acts on the target space M as isometries. And the twisted masses here can be thought of as equivariant parameters for the equivariant action, for the action of the flavor symmetry. And the examples to keep in mind, for example, the quintic and the cotangent band of the Grassmannian. So the quintic, what everyone knows how to describe it in terms of GLSM. Well, the gauge group is U1. We have chiral fields P and X1 up to X5. And they have, okay, these charges and the superpotential P times degree 5 polynomial of X. The cotangent band of the Grassmannian may be less familiar to you. So in this case, the gauge group is UN. As chiral multiplet, we have adjoint fields capital phi ij. I and j are gauge indices. We also have fundamentals qif. So f is a flavor index. We also have anti-fundamentals. So Q tilde Fi, and we have the superpotential Phi Q tilde with all indices contracted. So this is actually n equals 4.4 theory, but corresponding to the fact that T star of the cotangent band of the Grassmannian is hyperkeller. But by introducing twisted masses, especially for the adjoint, we are going to break n equals 4.4 to 2.2. Okay, so we are going to perform localization with boundary condition that preserve B-type off-shell supersymmetry. For the vector multiplet, we choose to use a boundary condition that preserves gauge symmetry along the boundary. So the vector multiplet in two dimensions contains two real scalars, and sigma 1 must satisfy the Dirichlet boundary condition, and the other real scalar sigma 2 must satisfy the Neumann boundary condition. For the chiral multiplet, well, in our paper, we consider two boundary conditions. One is the Neumann boundary condition, and the other one is the Dirichlet boundary condition. Okay, but by Neumann boundary conditions for chiral multiplet, I mean that the complex scalar phi in the multiplet satisfies the Neumann or Dirichlet boundary conditions, and the boundary condition for the rest of the fields are determined by supersymmetry, B-type supersymmetry. But these boundary conditions were. But in the flat case and in the flat and abelian case described by Herbst, Hori, and Page, we are considering a curved space. And in this talk, we are going to focus on the Neumann boundary condition for chiral multiplet. And I'm going to explain that this is enough. Yeah, so. Besides these Anist boundary conditions, we will also include the so-called boundary interactions. These are also introduced by Herbst, Hori, and Page for the in the abelian case. So from string theory, we know that we can introduce Champeyton degrees of freedom. So we pick a vector space V. It's assumed to be a representation of the gauge group, flavor group, and the U1, the canonical U1 R symmetry group. Now, for the R symmetry group, I demand that the Champeyton vector space is an Anist representation of U1. That is, if you consider the generator of this U1, then the eigenvalues of the generator must be integers. So we can decompose this space into eigenspaces. And so because the eigenvalues are integers, this space is now Z graded, and therefore automatically Z2 graded. Now, for the gauge group and the flavor symmetry group, I allow this space to be projective representations. Well, this is more or less similar to the case of superstring theory. But in superstring theory, we have when when we have a fermion zero modes, the Hilbert space is actually a representation of the spin group, not the special orthogonal group. And so similarly here, from the Lagrangian, we infer a gauge group, well, we infer a special gauge group and the Frobe group, but I allow the Chan pattern space to be a projective representation. Now the boundary interaction, in order to specify the boundary interaction, we also need to specify the linear operator that acts on the vector space. So Q of alpha is a linear operator. It's a polynomial in the color field phi, and it's assumed to be odd with respect to the Z2 grading. It needs to satisfy some transformation properties and gauge group, Frobe group, and U1 arithmetic group. Now, such an operator was called the tachyon profile in this reference. So once we focus on the normal boundary conditions, the boundary data is the boundary data B is a pair of the space V and the tachyon profile Q. Now we can write down the boundary interaction script A. Script A phi. So it is a sum of the following terms. So first of all, we have the gauge group. So we have the gauge field, the usual gauge field along the boundary. So this is a Wilson loop. We include the scalar in the vector multiplace. So now it's a supersymmetric Wilson loop, Maldacena Wilson loop. We have the twisted mass M. So this is the Frobe Wilson loop. We have the anti-commutator of Q and Q bar. So this is a boundary potential, and there are also fermionic terms. So because there are fermionic terms, this is essentially a super connection, and as a definition of the theory on a hemisphere, we choose to insert the super trace of the path ordered exponential of the boundary interaction. Yeah, so this kind of boundary interaction is necessary for supersymmetry. So namely, if you consider supersymmetry variation of the bulk Lagrangian, you find that there is a boundary term called the Wollner term. And so it has to be somehow canceled. And when we include the boundary interaction, the integrand of the path integral is e to the minus s and this super trace. And when you compute the Suzy variation of the integrand, you can check that the Wollner term, the boundary term from the action is canceled by the Suzy variation of the boundary interaction. Well, all this was explained in the work by Herbst, O'Holly, and Page in 2008, and well, in the abelian case, and this is a straightforward generalization to the non-abelian and equivariant case. Yeah, so in this setup, we are going to consider supersymmetric localization. Just to remind you how localization works, let's consider a path integral over some supersymmetric theory and pick a supercharged Q. So because the Q is a symmetry, well, the action is invariant. And by choosing a fermionic functional V, we can deform the action by adding a term like this. So T is some parameter. And I assume that Q dot V is invariant under Q. So then differentiation with respect to the parameter T brings down Q dot V, and then integration by parts in the by the fermionic and infinite dimensional version of integration by parts and Stokes theorem, we can show that this is zero. So the path integral does not depend on T, and we can send this parameter to plus infinity, and then we can evaluate the path integral by Gaussian integrals. So we need to compute the fluctuation determinant, and we need to sum or integrate over the saddle points. And for this computation, we use the supersymmetric Lagrangian and the supersymmetric transformations are constructed for the localization on a two-sphere. So this was done by these people, including people here. Yeah, so now for given bulk and boundary data, the Hermitian partition function can be computed, and the result is as follows. So as I said, this is a function of T and M. There is an integral over the zero mode of the scalar. So now sigma takes values in I times the real Cartan subalgebra of the gauge group. The boundary interaction gives this factor as it's a super trace. The sigma is now considered to be an element of the real algebra of the gauge group, and the twisted mass M is now considered to be the element of the real algebra of the Frevel group. There is a classical contribution, so the physical action contributes it to T dot sigma, and the hard part of the computation is this one loop determinant. So my collaborator computed this. It was a lot of computation. So this involves this product over positive roots, r dot sigma sine pi alpha dot sigma. So this is a peculiar modification of the usual van der Mond determinant. And there is also a product of gamma functions. So this is for the Neumann boundary condition. And in the paper, we also consider the Dirichlet boundary condition. And in that case, we get 1 over gamma factors. And that's, well, if you know the result of the Sierre partition function, that's necessary, because when you consider folding, when you make that two-sphere into a hemisphere, then some of the fields satisfy Dirichlet boundary conditions, so we need 1 over gamma. Okay. And this expression actually is related to the Miller-Landau-Ginzburg model. So especially in the abelian case, given a gauge linear signal model, we can take the Holy Wafer Miller-Landau-Ginzburg model, and the periodic integral that arises from the Landau-Ginzburg model can be written in this way. So by integrating over some of the fields, one can get a gamma function. Okay. So this is an integral formula for the Hermitian partition function, and we refer to it as a Coulomb branch localization because sigma is a Coulomb branch parameter. It's a scalar in the vector multiplet. Let's see. Yeah. So I said the sigma is integrated over I times the Cartan subalgebra, and this statement is strictly true if the twisted masses take values in a certain range, and for other values of the twisted masses, we define this by analytic continuation or equivalently by deforming the contours so that we don't pick extra poles. Anyway, so this can be evaluated, but in the geometric case, this can be evaluated by the residue theorem, in particular the multidimensional residue theorem, and it gives a summation formula for the Hermitian partition function. And for models with twisted masses like the Grassmannian or the cotangent band of the Grassmannian, we can write the Hermitian partition function as a finite sum over some parameter B, discrete parameter B. And we can introduce a Hilbert space interpretation and write it as an overlap of the boundary state and some state B and overlap of B and some state 1. So 1 is the state created by the identity operator. Now the T dependence, so the dependence on the FI, complexified FI parameter is in this part. And the overlap of V and 1 is essentially the so-called vortex partition function. So it's a two-dimensional analog of the Nekrasov instanton partition function. Yeah, so this is actually an infinite sum. And this sum comes from the sequence of poles from the gamma function. And this expression has an interpretation as a result of Higgs branch localization. So in the case of a two-sphere, these people introduced a particular localization action such that the theory localizes to a finite number of saddle points. So then this discrete parameter B corresponds to a classical Higgs vacuum of the theory. It should be pretty easy. It should be pretty straightforward to do Higgs branch localization anisotropy in the case of the hemisphere. But okay, we did not do it. We just started with this Coulomb branch integral representation and did the residue computation. I think this is a cleaner way of doing such a calculation. Well, geometrically, this expression, the summation of B, can be thought of as an expansion in the fixed point basis of equivalent k-theory. So namely, the classical Higgs vacuum B, they correspond to the fixed points on the target space with respect to the action of the Frevert symmetry group, the Cartan of the Frevert symmetry group. Well, I'll try to say a little bit more about equivalent k-theory later. Now, so this is a result of the Hilbert partition function for given boundary data. And we also have a summation formula. But it is also known in the geometric case that D-branes preserving B-type supersymmetry are objects in the derived category of coherent sheaves. Any objects, I mean B-brain in the derived category can be represented as a complex of holomorphic vector bundles, and those holomorphic vector bundles are space-filling D-brains. So that's why it was enough to consider Neumann boundary conditions. And given an object in the derived category, the boundary data, the Chan pattern space and the Tachyon profile Q can be constructed. But in the Abelian case, this was again explained by Herbst, Hori, and Page in 2008. So there is an algorithm to go from the derived category to the boundary data. And yeah, so again, we straightforwardly extended to the non-Abelian equivalent case. Well, as an example, let's consider the structure shift of the quintic, I mean, the space filling D brains with a trivial line bundle. So in this case, as a Chan pattern space, we can take the Fock space of a pair of Feynman oscillators. So eta and eta bar are the Feynman oscillators, and the Tachyon profile can be so if you apply this algorithm, the Tachyon profile can be written as g times eta plus p times eta bar. And the corresponding Hilbert partition function is given by this integral. Now let me argue that Hilbert partition function computes the central charge of the D brain. So this is an argument. This is not a proof. First of all, in the case of a two sphere, it was shown by Gomis and Lee that one can introduce a deformation of the sphere metric and such that the sphere partition function does not depend on the deformation. And it is expected that the Hamilton partition function also has such a property. So we expect that the Hamilton partition function is invariant under such deformation. One reason to expect such invariance is as follows. So often in supersymmetric localization, we can compute a one loop determinant by the equivariant index of a differential operator that appears in the localization action. And we expect that the equivariant index can be written as a sum of local contributions. Well, in the case of a two sphere, it's true that there are fixed points on the two sphere, north and south poles, and equivariant index is a sum of such local contributions. Well, in the case with boundary, it's a little more subtle, but we expect that the equivariant index can receive contribution from the fixed point, I mean the north pole, and also from the boundary. Such an argument was used successfully, for example, for the computation of the total loop operator on a four sphere. Essentially, the one loop determinant is determined. One loop determinant can be computed just by knowing the equivariant action of the isometry in the neighborhood of the fixed point and the boundary. The result of the localization should not depend on the details of the metric, as long as we have supersymmetry. So assume that the Hamilton partition function is invariant under such deformation. In the large deformation limit, this Hamilton partition function becomes a semi-infinite cylinder capped off at infinity. In this limit, we can check. We can check that there is a background gauge field, non-dynamical gauge field for the R symmetry group and also for Frege symmetry group. We can get rid of such non-dynamical gauge field by field redefinition. Now, after field redefinition, the fermions in the theory are periodic around S1. So that means that the theory is in the Ramon-Ramon sector. So the Hamilton partition function computes the overlap of some boundary state in the Ramon-Ramon sector, and also a state created by the hemisphere, which I call Ket1. A very similar setup was considered by a Chakotian buffer. In their case, they consider a very long cylinder capped off by a hemisphere. And on the hemisphere, they put a topologically twisted theory. Our setup is slightly different, but it's very similar. And if you also take mirror symmetry, then the set of Chakotian buffer leads to the hemisphere partition function given by the holomorphic three form integrated over Lagrangian submanifold corresponding to a mirror A brain. And it is known that this is an exact central charge. So by mirror symmetry, this is an argument for the statement that the hemisphere partition function computes the central charge of the D brain.
So how can you say that this is, in your case, one is the star metric and in this case, central charge?
Yeah, so this is this is an argument. I think so.
So what is an argument? That there, why they have to be the same?
I agree that the way the ground state is prepared in our case and Chakotian buffer is exactly the same. But the point is that the identity operator is the only one that is U1 actually invariant. experiment will break actual symmetry, it doesn't depend on the choice of one item for the chain. So you're essentially an entity, you're computing.
Axial symmetry is broken.
It's broken, but the partitional function does not depend on the this way, maybe we should just, I mean, this is.
Okay.
But the point is that it's two different ways of computing the overlap of zero, zero bar.
Yeah, but it's not just what's zero up to constant, but precisely what is the constant? What is the dependence on the parameter? It's most important. Parameter like chiral parameter, twisted chiral parameter. Only in the way how Chekhov buffer defined, not only such. At least in the way they have defined, you can show this differential equation.
Yeah.
Which is, this is just this TT star equation. But this is not the same, so you should redo this derivation of this TT star type equation.
He once shows that the sphere gives you the overlap of zero and zero bar.
But the precisely what's,
the right in a different way.
Yeah, but precisely how the zero depends on the parameter is the crucial question.
Maybe, I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think it's guaranteed that this state one is the same as the state given by Chekhov in Chekhov buffer. So that's why I say this is an argument, not a proof. Right? But it's possible to give more evidence for this statement. There is a well-known formula for the central charge in the large volume limit. So by the anomaly inflow argument, people found in the 90s that there is an approximate formula for the central charge. So it's given by an integral of the Chang character e to the B field 2 form and I times the Kähler form and the square root of L of genus. And this gives a polynomial. This gives a polynomial in the Kähler module, the Kähler parameters. And so, in our paper, we checked for the quintic and also for complete intersection, complete intersection Carabiao in a product of projective spaces. We checked that the Helmholtz partition function agrees with this large volume formula for the first three leading orders in the FI parameters. But the Helmholtz partition function is exact, and for example, it contains a term that contains a zeta of 3. And also, the Helmholtz partition function captures world shift intertons. Well, and I think Kentaro is going to say more about this using the so called gamma class. The sphere partition function also can be factorized using the Helmholtz partition function. So in our paper, we considered the cotangent bound of the Grassmannian. It's a model with a twisted mass. And in this case, we can factorize. So we can write the, for example, the sphere partition function as a finite sum over the discrete parameter B. And this overlap of 1 and b is essentially the vortex partition function, as I said. And we get exactly the same expression as this overlap that appears in the Helmholtz partition function. And this relation is true only if we include some factors, I mean, actually the signs in the computation of the sphere partition function. So in the Coulomb branch localization for the sphere partition function, there is a sum over the magnetic fluxes. And we need to include the sign factors that depend on the magnetic field. And so only if we include such factors, we have this exact relation. And if we introduce the basis of boundary states for the D-branes, we can also, then this relation is also well, equivalent to this relation, where chi ij is a matrix, well, it's an inverse to the matrix of cylinder partition functions. Right, so the agreement with the central charge formula is, it was the first test of a computation, and this factorization is the second test. Now, as the third test, I'm going to discuss Zeiberg-like dualities. So geometrically, this is just equality of the Grassmannian of n-dimensional subspaces in nf-dimensional space with Grassmannian of nf minus n-dimensional subspaces. Or we can consider the cotangent bundle of the Grassmannians. Now, in the case of the Grassmannian, the Hemisphere partition function is actually invariant under this duality transformation. And in the case of the cotangent bundle, the Hemisphere partition functions are not invariant, but they transform in a simple way under duality transformation. So this is the third test of the localization computation. Okay, so now I finish my discussion of the Hemisphere partition function. If there are any questions, yes.
Did you check any of the world sheet instanton corrections to the central charge?
Well, so let me see. So there are world sheet instanton corrections, and I don't know what to compare with.
Well, so using mirror symmetry and high stability.
Okay. Right.
Pretty explicit formula.
I see. Yes. Okay. With period integrals, right? No. Yeah. So the Hemisphere partition function actually satisfies differential equations.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So basically, the vortex partition functions themselves satisfy differential equations, and well, in the case of a quintic, well, in the case of a quintic, actually, you have to. But it's not completely automatic because the order of the different, you have to be careful about the order of the, that's right, yeah, the order of differential. But yeah, it's possible to check that it satisfies the correct differential, the Picard-Fuchs equation, and yeah, so it agrees with the period integrals. Yeah. Okay, any more questions? Yeah, so I do think that Holmic block in 3D, the analog of the Hemisphere partition function, but it should be possible to specify precisely the boundary conditions in the three-dimensional case, and I don't think that has been done yet. Okay, so now I want to discuss domain walls. So by definition, a domain wall is a one-dimensional object that separates two regions in two-dimensional space-time. In this setup, well, in the case of, for example, cylinder or the sphere, one can define a map from, one can define a transformation for the field from the left region to the right region. So if you do that, the theory on this space becomes a theory on half of the space, half of the space time. So the domain wall now becomes a boundary in the product theory. So this is this is called a folding trick, and the theory obtained in this way is called a folding theory. Now it's clear, yeah. Yeah, it's clear that we can use the formalism of Hemisphere partition function to compute the domain wall expectation value. Domain walls also form algebras. By general arguments, domain walls or line operators must satisfy some kind of fusion. Some kind of fusion rules, fusion algebra. So when you fuse two domain walls, we get some linear combination of irreducible domain walls, well, with some coefficients. And it was proposed by Nekrasov and Shostakovich, maybe rather implicitly in their papers, but well, anyway, this was proposed by Nekrasov and Shostakovich that they proposed that the algebra formed by domain walls should be closely related to the so-called geometric representation theory. So geometric representation theory is a field in mathematics where people use object in the derived category or K theory or homology to construct geometrically various algebras. And the reason why I got interested in this story was that so the gauge theories of the sort I've been talking about are related to quantum integrable systems. So around Nekrasov and Shostakovich. So for example, if we consider the correction of the quotient amount of Grassmannians with the parameter n varying from 0 to n sub f, then these systems give rise to, but this in some sense, this is related to the Heisenberg XXX spin chain model for spin 1/2 representation of SU2. And Nekrasov and Shostakovich noticed that the chiral ring relations in these theories can be identified with the Bethe-Andertz equations. So that's a rather precise relation between the quantum integrable models and the gauge theories. And spin chain models are known to have various infinite dimensional symmetries, such as Youngian. Yeah, so my goal was to study the Youngian, but in this talk I'm not gonna talk about Youngian. We'll see. So as I said, we can use the hemisphere partition function or a version of it extended by local operators to compute domain wall expectation values or matrix elements. So if we do not have those local operators by folding, we get this can be written as a hemisphere partition function for product theory. But we now extend this to include the local operators. So domain wall corresponds to some boundary condition, boundary state, and okay, this can be written in this way, and by inserting a complete basis of states, we can read off this matrix element VWW. Okay, and so using this matrix element, we can compute the algebra satisfy the domain walls. As an example, we obtain the SL2 affine Hecke algebra. So SL2 affine Hecke algebra it's an algebra generated by two generators, T and X. So Q is a complex parameter, and T and X satisfy these relations. This is a deformation of the wide group of the SU2. And we found that domain walls in the model that have T star P1 as a target space realize this algebra. So the more precise, most precise correspondence is as follows. Well, so in any theory, that diagonal, the identity operator or the transparent domain wall corresponds to the diagonal of the product of space. The generator X corresponds to a simple charge minus one Wilson loop. And for T, actually, it's easier to consider this combination minus one minus T. And we found that this corresponds to the push forward of some line bund over P1 times P1. So it's a line bund of Q2 minus 1/2 or minus 1 or minus 1. So push forward by the inclusion to T star of P1 times P1. And these are actually sheaves, and these sheaves agree with what mathematicians found in geometric representation theory. But actually, SL2 affine Hecke algebra is one of the most basic examples in geometric representation theory considered by Kazan and Lustig. And in a work in progress, we are considering Yang-Yang, or actually it's a trigonometric version, the quantum affine algebra. Yeah, so let me now conclude. We define and compute these hemisphere partition functions, and we check the result by the large volume formula, factorization, and dualities. And we also showed that the domain walls, in the T star P1 model, form an expected SL2 affine Hecke algebra. Okay, that's it. Yeah, thank you. First of all, that's because that's the geometry Kazan Lustig considered. Another very concrete reason is that the differential equation corresponding to the model is actually just a hypergeometric equation, and Chelotnik, Chelotnik showed that one can construct this affine Hecke algebra from the monodromy of the differential equation. Because there is some time, I can also mention that in a very closely related model, in a model very closely to T star P1. In a model, so T star P1 has some superpotential, but we can get rid of superpotential, we get some theory. This actually corresponds to a surface operator in a four-dimensional gauge theory, as found by Jaumer and his collaborators. Right, and there are four-dimensional line operators bound to the surface operator, and it was conjectured by Ardai, Gukov, Ardai, Gayot, Gukov, Tachikawa, and Varinde that these line operators correspond to the monodromy in the space of FI parameters. Yeah, so the monodromy of the Hemisphere partition function should correspond to the line operator. And indeed, we showed that our techniques can be used to compute the expectation value of the domain world, and it agrees with the monodromy of the Hemisphere partition function. Yeah, our formulas can also be used to check AGT correspondence.
Have you considered
talking like separate one-dimensional on the equator? Let me see. So the boundary interaction, it's possible to think of it as a result of integrated down to the degrees of freedom living on the equator, as shown by Kentaro and other people.